Whether writing history or fiction, the basic tools of the author's craft are the same. I've just returned from the Florida's Writers Conference, where I had the pleasure of speaking with industry professionals. Lynn Price is the editorial director of Baylor Publications, an independent traditional publisher of fiction and nonfiction, focusing on personal journeys with social relevance. Lynn is also an award-winning author of The Writer's Essential Tackle Box, which she describes as a unique parting of the clouds for the confusing and often contradictory information circulating in writers' boards, conferences, blogs, and how-to books. From her point of view as a publisher, she helps educate writers as to why manuscripts are accepted or rejected, plus pitfalls to avoid. The book includes comprehensive interviews with industry pros, elements of the submission process, the wide world of publishing options, and even features a writer's emergency style guide. Welcome, Lynn. Thanks for joining us. Okay, we're here at the Florida Writers Conference, and you've been discussing backstory bedlam, what to use, what to lose. So, backstory bedlam, give us the elevator story.
Well, it's knowing what is going to be dull and boring and off topic from the standpoint of furthering the plot, and what is going to enhance the character. Backstory is delicious. That's the main thing. Many people say, no, you take backstory out. It doesn't belong in the book. Baloney. It is delicious. That's the stuff that creates the character, the joy, the dimension to any story and to any character. You know, it's Savalas in his lollipop with Kojak. You know, why does he have that? Well, it has nothing to do with the plot, but it's an affectation. It's something. Maybe there's a backstory behind that. And that is what keeps people turning the pages. You're falling more in love with the character or the plot. And that is what backstory can do for you. It can kill and it can thrill. Open up a book and say, boom, here's the character. Just like real people, characters have a backstory. They have baggage. They have lives. They have events and adventures that form who they are and why they are the way they are. If you bring in those elements, it gives you that, oh, now I understand why they're afraid of the dark or why they scratch their belly button when they find something funny. It's explaining those little quirks. It's explaining who they are. It's just like if you meet somebody that you really like, the first thing you want to say is, well, tell me more. Then you're going more deeply into who that character is or that person you've just met. You're going deeper into who they are. And the more you uncover, the more real they become.
I heard you say in your talk today, it's kind of like what has been happening off stage. And I thought that was a brilliant way to describe it.
Yeah. Too many people lose the idea of, you know, well, what do you mean by backstory? And it's basically all the stuff that took place off stage. Writers aren't writing their story. They aren't writing the backstory of their story. They're writing the story because of what happened off stage. Something happened off stage that became the ignition point for this current story that's now taking place. And so if you keep that in mind of that, what happened off stage, maybe it keeps it more clear in the writer's mind about what to use and what to lose, what's important and what isn't so important.
Okay, I also heard you talk about prologue cop-out. Explain that.
It's prologue abuse.
Oh.
It goes even worse than that. Prologues, unlike what a lot of people might say, I love a good prologue. The problem with prologues is that there has been the tendency to abuse them. They become the info dump. And because it has gotten that bad name, a lot of people don't read it. Well, you know what? You paid for the book. It's between the covers. Why not read it? But the way to have a great prologue is it might have information that is absolutely vital to the reader in order for the rest of the story to make sense. It's so you use it to impart information that the reader must know. It's short and sweet, very short and sweet. I'm talking 3-5 pages long. And it's information that you can't really realistically sprinkle in the book.
Another writer's element you talked about today was transition.
Yes.
And this is something that's kind of a little harder for an aspiring or new writer to grasp. Talk about that.
Well, I used the analogy today about this manuscript that I had read, and God forbid the poor author is listening to this, but she was writing this raucous scene where these two guys are fighting in a house, and I mean, they're throwing each other over furniture, and lamps are being broken, and mirrors are shattered, and then all of a sudden, Jack always wondered why he hated Alan. Was it perhaps because he cheated on his sister? He wasn't quite sure, and it was like, whoa! You know, it almost felt like a commercial break. And this little backstory inclusion lasted for, I don't know, a couple of paragraphs, and all of a sudden, boom! It jumps right back into the blood, the guts, the teeth flying, the whole thing, and I'm thinking, okay, it felt like a commercial break. With a transition, what you're doing is exactly what it means. You're taking your reader from the current scene, what's going on in the scene, and it's segueing into the backstory. So let's say you're talking, let's say we're using the same fight scene. So instead of using this commercial break of Jack always wondered why he hated Alan, they could still keep that action going on, but use it as dialogue. Dude, I always hated you. You know, you cheated on my sister. You're nothing but a slunzbug, and I can't wait to just punch your lights out. Now you're talking about there's a little bit of backstory in there delivered via dialogue that transitions somewhat out of the scene, but yet it stays within the scene.
Now, you've written The Writer's Essential Tackle Box, and let's talk about some of the elements in there, included the emergency style guide. I love that. Talk a little about that.
Basically, you know, that is not meant to replace the Chicago Manual of Style or anything like that. Basically, it's a collection of the things that I saw that were very common that made me kind of sit back with my bloody red pen and think, I think I'm working with maybe a less experienced writer. And so I put this together to try to help them avoid those common mistakes, you know, there and there. You know, silly things like that. Talking about POV switches, being very careful of that. And it does go into more into syntax and those types of things, but it's quick, down and dirty, and it is just nothing but a survival style guide. It's not real long, but it is real common. They have all these common mistakes, and I thought it would be helpful to just throw them on in there, because if I'm seeing them all over the place, then I know that they're being made all over the country.
What are some of the most common mistakes in manuscripts that result in rejection?
Well, let's see. Oh, boy, there are so many. I think a lot of the things that I see, they don't really tell me what the book is about, the who, what, when, where, why. They might be talking about, it's very general. It's general description. Well, my book is about, Uncle Joe who lives on a farm and milks cows. That's general description that leaves you saying, yeah, okay, and then what happened? So what you're looking for is the guts of the story. Why is Uncle Joe on the farm? What is he doing? There's got to be a conflict, whether it's an internal conflict, but there is something that's going on that the main character stands to lose, whether metaphorically or literally, but there is something that the protagonist is at risk of losing. It's got to be something big. I want to know what that is. Not only do I want to know what that is, but I also want to know if my protagonist makes this choice, that's going to happen. If they take that choice, that's going to happen. So basically what I'm getting is a fuller picture of the depth of what this book is about, rather than Uncle Joe living on a farm milking cows. So that is one of the most common mistakes. Most people don't know how to write a proper query letter, and there's no excuse for it anymore because there is so much great help online in Tacklebox and reading editors and agents' blogs. Or they won't tell me what the genre is. They won't tell me what the word count is. They'll forget to tell me that. And so, well, is this fiction? Is this nonfiction? Well, what's the word count? It could be anywhere from 50,000 words to 240,000 words. That's got to know stuff. If it's 240,000 words, I stop reading right then and there. And basically, it just comes from not understanding how to write a proper query letter and what people are looking for. And I go into great detail with that with Tacklebox. And I try to simplify it. This is not rocket science.
To conclude, what do you think is the best kind of plan of action for aspiring writers?
The number one thing I think writers can do to help their career is going to writers' conferences, because not only are you learning a tremendous amount, which is a comment I've been hearing literally all day long, but you're networking. You're meeting agents. You're meeting editors in a relaxed situation where you've got our undivided attention. You can buy that kind of attention by coming to a conference. Also, getting online. There is so much information out there that will help you learn about the industry. Also, getting in with a good writer's group who can help you critique. And you can critique. By critiquing somebody else's work, you're learning a lot about writing yourself. Those, I think, are the most important things that a writer can do to launch their career and get started in writing their own books.
Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule. This is fascinating stuff. Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I appreciate it.